Is it 6 o'clock?
Yes.
I'd like to call the Healthcare and Veterans Affairs Committee to order. It is now 6 p.m. on, April 7th? Actually reconvene.
We're reconvening.
Okay. With that, I would like to open a work session on 451.
Madam Chair, 451 requires Department of Human Services to establish and operate a statewide registry for collection and dissemination of physician orders for life-sustaining treatment, and it's 541-2. And it's in your packet.
Dr. Smith, will you please come forward just to make sure that we have, we're including everything we're supposed to be including in here.
Mr. Chair, Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, I'm Janine Smith, the administrator for the Office of Health Policy and Research, and we were addressing Senate Bill 451. It has two amendments, dash one and a dash two, and we need to consider both of them. The first one was submitted by the Oregon Health Fund Board to, as they have done to all the bills, to get health equities sorted through, so there was some language clarifying some of the representation on the advisory board for the post. And the dash twos was language requested by legislative council to clarify absolutely that DHS can contract out to do this.
But the ones are included in the twos.
No. Chair Mona Sanderson, Senator Cruz, no. The one, they're set to, you actually need one plus two to make this perfect.
You need dash ones
and dash twos.
Okay.
The amendment or the fiscal from Legislative Council only includes. Oh, we have two amendments. Two fiscals.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, Chair. Notice, Anderson, you should have fiscals on both of those amendments.
We did not change the original fiscal.
Madam Chair, the dash threes basically are an emergency clause.
Chair Mona Sanderson, Senator Cruz, I don't believe there's an emergency. There isn't a dash three.
I've got a dash three right here in front of me.
I believe that's for one of the other bills.
452-3.
No, this is 451.
Oh, if I got the right bill, it would be helpful. Okay, fine.
Wait, we're passing all
the
because he's not. We'll do the one that, where we don't need you.
So, Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 451.
Senator Cruz moves the dash one and Senate Bill 451. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move the dash two amendment to Senate Bill 451.
Senator Cruz moves the dash 2 to Senate Bill 451. Any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 451 as amended by the dash 1 and dash 2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means with an enthusiastic send it to the floor.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 451 as amended with the 1s and 2s to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means with a due pass. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered. And no, it goes to Ways and Means, so there's no carrier. Okay. I'd like to close the work session on Senate Bill 451, and I'd like to open a work session on 455, because that's one where we might have some problems, and Dr. Bates can't stay here.
455. Okay.
Madam
Chair, Senate Bill 455 requires the Health Resources Commission to conduct comparative effectiveness research and disseminate research findings.
Okay.
Chair Mona Sanderson, I need to reintroduce myself. For the record, I'm Janine Smith, the Administrator of the Office of Health Policy and Research, still. And for 455, there was one amendment at the request of the committee to change on line 20, delete the encourage the adoption of and insert the word adopt, and also on line 24, go from are encouraged to the stronger term insert shall. Okay, is there any discussion?
No. The train's left the station, I believe, Madam Chair.
Okay.
I'll move the...
The dash one amendments?
Dash one.
Both those are dash ones?
I've got the dash one amendments.
Chair Mona Sanderson, Senator Bates, yes, those both were in the 455 dash ones.
It's my job to do that motion. You don't want the ones, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move the dash one minutes, Senate Bill 455.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves dash ones to Senate Bill 455. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition?
Yeah, I oppose the dash one amendment, but that's okay.
Okay. Will the clerk call the roll on the dash one amendments?
Senator Bates.
Aye.
Senator Morissette.
Aye.
Senator Moore.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz.
No.
Chair Montanison.
Aye. Motion carried.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 455 as amended with the dash one amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 455.
By prior reference, I believe, is the correct.
As amended with the dash ones to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means with a due pass. Is there any discussion? Yes.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think the main reason I'm objecting to this is there are efforts taking place at the national level. And I'm not quite sure why we want to jump out ahead and do something that may not conform with national standards.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Okay. Look at it.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates.
Aye.
Senator Morissette.
Aye.
Senator Moore.
Aye.
Senator Cruz.
No.
Chair Montanison.
Aye. Motion carried. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 455, and I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 452.
Chairman, do you want to invite me?
Senate Bill 452 establishes the Health Information Technology Oversight Council with the Department of Human Resources.
Chair Mona Sanderson, and members of the committee, again, Janine Smith, Administrator of the Office of Health Policy and Research. I wanted to invite Lee Sailors up, the Governor's Health Advisor, who's been helping do this bill with us.
Okay, you okay now?
Yeah.
You're okay with 457?
Yes.
Good evening, Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee. I'm Reed Sailors, Health Policy Advisor to the Governor. And Senate Bill 452 would provide for the establishment of a Health Information Technology Oversight Council. It would be responsible for setting up a statewide plan for health information exchange and would also provide the convening role and coordinative role with the private and public sectors working together to maximize and leverage the resources in the state. This bill also positions us well to request and compete for federal stimulus dollars to help accelerate the adoption and implementation and usage of electronic health records and health information exchange in Oregon. For those of you who may not remember, we have had a study done here in Oregon, and once we fully deploy electronic health records and the ability to exchange those records, or interoperability as it's called, the estimated savings per year is approximately $1 billion. Now, this will take us time, and so these first steps are very important, and the opportunity to take advantage of the stimulus dollars, which come and kind of burst on the scene
machine and give us kind of a jetpack to make this happen. And so that's what this bill is designed to do, is to put into place the Oversight Council, giving it the authority and the direction to create a plan, and also to request and seek federal stimulus grant dollars. The amendment, the Dash 3 amendment, really were a combination of amendments which were really pulling us in line. Originally, in the original bill, the members of the Oversight Council were to receive compensation and travel. That compensation was struck so that it's travel only. We also had in the original language that they would meet at least monthly, and we've changed that to at least quarterly and more frequently if needed by the call of the council itself. And then we've also asked for the emergency clause because we want to have this in place as soon as possible so that they can start to work.
And these are the Dash 3s only that we're considering?
That's correct.
Well, okay. Madam Chair, I have a question. The ones and twos basically talked about setting up a fund in the state treasury. Why are we no longer doing that?
Yes, there was a technical legal problem with the language in the setting up a separate fund, which would have prevented us from being able to get federal match. And so we've withdrawn that language in order to make sure that we can use federal match dollars.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? We're in work session.
Yeah, a couple more questions. and Dr. Smith and I talked about this earlier, and I just wanted to put some things on the record. I have assurances, Madam Chair, that this is in no way going to be impeding the local efforts of communities that have developed some pretty good information systems, and that this is going to actually, the desire is to have a nexus for the transfer of information. But the other, I mean, there's several pieces of this. Obviously, the PUC has some stimulus dollars as well for hardwiring some facilities, which fits into this very well and also moves us more towards our telehealth concept that we're working on as well. So I guess, Madam Chair, I'd say, looking at the, this is a huge undertaking and a very exciting undertaking. My only concern is the dollars here may not be sufficient, but I guess we'll tell in time, because this is going to be comprehensive and it's going to require consultation with a whole lot of folks.
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, you're absolutely correct, and we are also looking and coordinating with, there is broadband stimulus dollars that we're working with. One of the five top priorities for use of those dollars is for healthcare and telehealth so that we can create hub opportunities within communities, either at hospitals or schools, so that we can essentially wire those communities. And then it would also be my absolute inclination that the existing community efforts, there are several areas of the state where there have been very earnest and very sophisticated efforts to put electronic health records in place, and they are on the precipice of wanting to do electronic health exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the kind of dollars that would go to help that kind of effort. So the idea here is for Oregon to create health information exchanges, so we're a network of networks that plugs into a network of networks at the national level, too. So I think Senator Cruz, before, you've mentioned some privacy and security things, and one of the things that is nice about the Stimulus Act is that it strengthens the privacy and security requirements both at the federal level and does not trump the state's laws that are more stringent around privacy protections. So I think we feel very good about our ability to have a good privacy and security policies.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I mean, this is really positive. We're dragging ourselves into the 21st century, both in healthcare and education, kind of simultaneously, and both efforts, I think, are going to pay huge dividends. So, Madam Chair, with that, I would move the Dash 3 amendment.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves the dash threes to Senate Bill 452. Is there any further discussion?
Madam Chair, yes. I'm just kind of curious about what's happening on the House side to House Bill 2142. Is that a companion or a duplicate of this or what? Are we on the same track?
Chairman Manus Anderson, Senator Morissette, my understanding is that you are perfecting this bill on behalf for the House, and they will follow your lead.
Okay, so that bill is going to, they're going to change it. Is this going to be the only bill, or are they going to do their own and send it to Ways and Means?
Well, I couldn't predict.
Okay. Very good. Just so we're not doing different amendments.
Okay. We moved, have we moved the dash
three? We have not banged the gavel yet, no.
And I said, is there any further discussion?
No, right.
Okay, so Senator Cruz has moved.
I've moved the dash three amendments.
The dash three is into 452.
But you haven't asked if there's any objections.
Is there any objection? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 452 as amended by the dash three amendments to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral of the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 452 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I am totally supportive of developing standards and creating a process where we can gain access to federal funds. But this bill goes too far, and it needlessly complicates when we are giving this oversight council this public-private purchasing collaborative where we're identifying vendors and even hardware and software and technical support services. Madam Chair, that's an area that I think needlessly complicates, and it's an inappropriate role at this point in time.
Have we discussed this before?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Senator Cruz?
Madam Chair, I shared Senator Morris's concerns, which is why I said earlier the things that I said, quite simply to have the assurance that we are not going to dictate to local folks who are developing their networks what sort of program, what sort of software, what sort of anything they need. And my hope and desire is that this is modeled after what the K-12 system has done to comply with No Child, which required an incredible amount of additional data on each child be created. And what K-12 or what ODE has done with that is basically say every school district that has their own system can keep their own system. What we will do at the state level is we will create the ability for that information to be transferred and translated as necessary so that a school district here with this system can send information to a school district here with a different system. And so this is a translation link to do that. And I've got the assurances that that is the direction they're going. And with that, I was relatively comfortable.
Madam Chair, and I agree with Senator Cruz, however, that's not where this is going. Plain reading of the bill, it's not where it's going in my judgment, so I will be a no vote.
Chairman Mona Sanderson, Senator Morse, the portion of the bill that talks to the purchasing cooperative is the result of recommendations that came from the Health Information and Infrastructure Advisory Committee that was struck about a year ago through executive order by the governor. The point in this instance of the purchasing coalition is in attempting to help physicians adopt systems, we were trying to create a bulk purchasing discount advantage for them. And so the process to be used was to basically do a competitive process and pick six or eight vendors out of that, which is actually what is dominant in the state already, to be honest with you. And the idea was to give not only assistance to physicians to adopt this into their offices, and particularly rural physicians, but to also give them not just the hardware and the software, but the technical assistance and maintenance capabilities that it takes, because they don't have IT departments and little 1, 2, 3 doctor offices. And so consequently, as the group went through this over the course of the last year, what they came up with is that we would be able to negotiate a discounted price arrangement and sort of package certain types of software with those maintenance and technicians who are capable and certified to work on those things, so that they wouldn't get into a lot of the problems they've gotten into, where they buy a system off the shelf, it doesn't fit their needs, or they buy a system and somebody says they can work it and maintain it, but indeed they don't know that system. So the idea here was to have more of a competitive opportunity, where we would say we're looking for certified systems only. There are national standards that will certify electronic health record systems, and so it has to be a certified system. That is also a condition of the stimulus dollars. Physicians, hospitals, all have to use certified technology, and those standards are available now. All we were trying to do with the idea of the purchasing coalition was for small practices in rural areas and practices that have a high degree of Medicaid patients in their practice, we were trying to arrange a discount program for them, and by virtue of narrowing it down from, say, 90 vendors to, you know, 6, 8, 10 vendors, we could also use the economies of scale for the maintenance, the technicians, and the HIT tech people that went with that. So that's really, it's not a dictating of what you have to use, and it's not in any way designed to reverse systems that are in place. The systems that are in place are really under the federal gun to make sure that their systems are certified and in compliance with national standards. The state would not be setting the technical standards at all. Those are being set at the federal level. So that is really what that portion of the bill is talking about. It's how can we help leverage the state's buying expertise, if you wish, in a way that we could provide discount pricing to those small practices. The state of Vermont has done this, and it has really helped physicians to do that. In addition, there are possibilities with the stimulus grant for us to have a loan fund. There is an 80-20 match by the feds for a loan fund, which could potentially allow those small practices to get a loan to buy with those discounted arrangements, and if they are meaningfully using HIT by a date certain that's put in the Stimulus Act, then they qualify for reimbursement of a portion of those expenses that they had to front with the loan, so to speak, which will help them pay back the loan. And in addition to that, they qualify for enhanced payment rates under either Medicaid or Medicare. So it's kind of a recycling program, if you wish, that's really trying to say, how can we get the most bang for the buck, and also how can we help physicians match up with the technology and the technicians that they need to maintain their systems.
Thank you.
I had heard from just a couple of providers that he would like the system, would like to have assistance, because he really was clueless as to where to go to get the right software, et cetera. And that was from someone who does not have computers, I assume, billing in their practice.
That's absolutely correct, Chair Mona Sanderson, and the research tells us both nationally and in Oregon that some of the major barriers for adoption by small physician practices, which are very dominant in this state, are a combination of cost, the lack of IT expertise, the inability to be able to feel comfortable that they can maintain the system, and then previously, before now, this has changed, but previously there were not the federal standards that are in place now, so they weren't sure that, they were afraid they were going to buy a system, and then later the standards would tell them that they had bought the wrong system. So what we tried to do with the HIAC activities, and we worked with, we have on that, that's a multi-stakeholder group on that advisory group, and what we tried to do was systematically try and address the barriers that we know stand between adoption and implementation.
Yes, Senator.
Thank you very much for that. I asked my doctor about a month ago what he thought, and he said, don't even go there. No way. But I think that makes sense, is you have to have assistance to buy the program, and you have to have the expertise to install it and to back it up and all of that stuff. And then once it's going, I think it'll be great. But sounds good.
Andrew Cruz?
Yeah, let me throw a hypothetical out there. You come up with your 8 vendors. Okay. DSIPA and Roseburg, which has their own system, has a different system. What happens to them at that point?
They can have the system they have. And one thing, I as a layperson have had to learn a lot about this, and so there's the fundamental building block of this whole system is the electronic health record. That's in the physician's office. And it used to be called an electronic medical record. An electronic medical record is in the doc's office, but it can't send its information outside. It can only be inside that office. Now the standard is electronic health record, and by definition, federal definition, an electronic health record has, if they're certified by the CCHIT, it's called, then they have the inherent capacity to ultimately be interoperable, which means they can move that information outside themselves to another entity. DSIPIDA has a system already, and DSIPIDA's obligation under the federal law will be to make sure that its system can talk to other systems.
Right.
That's the interoperability. And the idea of how we get there is to build something similar to what you described in education, would be potentially several what we would call regional exchanges. Mm-hmm. And those are your kind of translator hubs and transmission hubs. So whatever system was feeding in, because of the standards being set, similar to what you have in banking now for ATM cards and stuff like that, that's now available to us where 2 years ago it wasn't, 4 years ago for sure it wasn't. Now we have those standards. So now the next step up is everybody gets electronic health records, which is what this procurement program is about. And then the other grants that are available from the federal government are to help us build those exchanges and help people be interoperable. So that's what the big push from the Federal Stimulus Act is to move us on to the interoperability stage. And that's what those dollars are for.
Madam Chair, your answer was supposed to be... If their system meets the standards and is connectable, then they're fine, even
exactly.
though it wasn't one of the 8 that you're marketing.
You took the words right out of my
mouth.
Okay, thank you. Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Morissette.
We were in Paris, and I used my ATM card, credit card. It works just like that. Are you saying that someday, if we're in Paris... Have. I can put a health card in. My health records can be transferred as easily as money can be transferred?
I would say we will be able to move your information as easily. This country does not seem to be moving in the smart card direction. There are some other countries in the world that have, but the technology we're adopting here will still be able to move that information. It just might not be exactly like an ATM card.
Well, okay, but you can move the information.
Absolutely.
That's what we're after, exciting about it. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Senator Cruz moved the -3s.
I moved the bill. Didn't I?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, I did.
Oh, no further discussion. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates.
Excused.
Senator Morissette.
Aye.
Senator Moore.
No.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chair Monica
Anderson. Aye. Motion carried. With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 452, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 457.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 7 requires specific healthcare workforce regulatory boards to collect information from licensees and report information to the Office for Oregon Health Policy and Research for creation of a healthcare workforce database.
Okay, Dr. Smith, do you want to just bring us
Chair
up to date?
Chair Anderson, members of the committee, I'm Janine Smith, the Administrator for the Office of Health Policy and Research, and before you are the Dash 1s, I believe. This bill, as noted by Mr. Shook, is an attempt to get better data collection around health professions, and so we can better understand our workforce and be able to future target investment. The Dash 1s just do some clarification that was primarily came from, the need to make sure that we're cognitive of health disparities so that race and ethnicity and use of to inform strategies that could reduce healthcare disparities and make sure that the data is collected in such a way that we can inform that. And it also improves some privacy protection for the licensees and includes certified occupational therapist assistants and certified nursing assistants. So just some clarification about the term certified and licensed was added, just to be clear.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 457.
Senator Cruz has moved the Dash 1s into Senate Bill 457. Is there any discussion? Yes.
Just a question, Dr. Smith. We had a very excellent work group in the interim and lots of stakeholders. Are they happy with this product?
Chair Mona Sanderson, Senator Morris. Yes, this is Joe Iskrig and the Workforce Institute and members of your interim task force all helped craft this. Essentially, this was very similar to the language in Senate Bill 11. It's the same effort. It's all collaborative in spirit to get these words in the paper that you see before you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, the clerk will call the roll on the amendment.
It doesn't have a source code. We probably need to send that, don't we?
I think so. We'll check
Senator
that.
Beach.
Excuse.
Senator Morissette.
Aye.
Senator Moore.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chair Montanison.
Aye.
That was the Dash 1.
That was the Dash 1s.
Okay, Madam Chair.
So ordered.
Looking at the fiscal, it's got a fiscal of almost a half million, so I'm assuming we need to send it to Ways and Means.
Yeah.
Although it did not have a one by prior reference. So with that, Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 457 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Cruz has moved Senate Bill 457 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates.
Excused.
Senator Morissette.
Aye.
Senator Moore.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chair Montanison.
Motion carried.
You didn't vote.
Oh, aye.
Okay, that's better.
Motion carried.
Thank you.
I will close the work session on Senate Bill 457, and I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 456.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 456 establishes an Oregon Integrated Health Home Program and the Office for Oregon Health Policy and Research to establish standards for certification of integrated healthcare practice as an integrated health home and to establish a collaborative to exchange information about quality information and best practices.
Colleagues, we've already discussed this bill, and there's two amendments that I want to discuss. We will not be moving any more bills tonight, but we need to start working now on these last three. And so with we have one amendment, the Dash 1s, I believe, the Dash 2s.
And the Dash 3s.
And so we'll talk about the Dash 2s first. And that has to do with the name change. And I just want to There's a fight going on between some managed care organizations and the Oregon Health Fund Board regarding the name. So I'd like to briefly talk about the name change, and let's have the proponents of the Dash 2s come forward. And I assume that is Jeff Hetherington, and Jonathan Eames is not coming forward. Okay. He's been bugging me all the time.
Yes, I guess you have the Dash 2s in front of you, and they clearly outline what we're proposing. They're not in a technically correct format coming out of LC, and evidently there's a Dash 4 or something 5 coming out on that. The position, I'm Jeff Hetherington. I represent the Coalition of for a Healthy Oregon, and it's 9 of the managed care plans under the Oregon Health Plan. And what we are proposing is to use a name in the bill that is widely understood and will give some guidance to the people who set up the process that's described in the bill. The current name is the Integrated Health Home. What we are proposing is the patient-centered primary care home, and that may not seem like a very important concept, but in fact it makes quite a statement once you start looking around for definitions. I did a Google on the integrated health home. You'll find a couple of references to nursing homes, and that's about it. If you do patient-centered primary care home, you find a number of references, including a national association that has been working for a number of years to develop, you know, the medical home concept. They have a set of principles. They have a large group of members. Many state Medicaid associations are part of it, large corporations, a number of your larger universities. Harvard is part of that. University of Washington is part of it. University of Wisconsin. And I can provide you with a list of all the people that are in there who understand what a patient-centered medical home is, what it looks like, and how it's structured. And we think that, you know, as we go forward with the medical home, which we think is a good idea, that it is important to use some nationally developed ideas and standards. And you don't have to adopt all of them, but certainly that's the platform, rather than trying to invent our own integrated medical home, whatever that means.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Morrison.
Well, are you implying that we would become part of one of those associations, or we would be confused with some of those other associations? Or?
Well, from what we've heard of the discussions of the integrated health home, we are confused. And I guess I would state my own opinion that I'm surprised that, you know, that it didn't come out using both the language and the concepts that are developed, you know, have been developed at a national level and are being used by other organizations. You know, instead, the conversations that I heard, frankly, were all over the board. What do we call it? What does it look like? How are we going to develop it?
Well, and well, I guess my question was, is there any intention of being affiliated with a national or other groups? And if not, is the name going to be confusing to people wondering if we are affiliated or?
Well, I can't answer the first question, Senator Morissette, because I don't know about the intention. I certainly, my comment would be that I think we should at least affiliate with an organization that's done an awful lot of research in this particular area and use the expertise and information that they have gathered as we go about designing our own medical home process.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Yes, Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The original bill, line 9, page 1, addresses the nationally accepted certification criteria and processes. And Jeff, if we don't have an integrated health home certification nationally,
what would this language mean? I guess I'm kind of in sympathy with where you're going. And if you would, maybe comment based on what nationally certified might mean under the name change, patient-centered primary care.
Well, Chair Mo Sanderson and Senator Morris, I would say that under the current bill, I don't know that the way I read it and the way that the coalition people read it was that national certification didn't relate to anything except the integrated medical home, which did not have a clear definition. And, you know, we were concerned about that. We think that if you put patient-centered primary care home in there, it does start to point to definitions that are already in process. I guess, you know, it's clarity versus non-clarity, and we're very concerned as we go down this road that non-clarity leaves us wide open to all sorts of interpretations.
Okay. I don't want to spend too much more time, but I'd like a representative from the Oregon Health Fund Board to come forward to explain to us why you feel the integrated health home is a better name.
Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, I apologize. I had a memo we were preparing, not knowing we were going to do this today, but it, summarizing the work of the work group that we did convene to get to your dash threes. But in essence, some of that work group included members of the Health Fund Board, Chuck Hoffman, and included Dick Stinson, who's the chair of the Delivery Committee, which did extensive three or four meeting discussion about this in our meeting for about 2.5 to 3 hours. About this time last year. And the feeling was that we had actually done an exhaustive review of the literature around the term medical home, patient-centered primary care home, and we had provided to the committee what was going on in Oregon and what was going on nationally. And we discussed the concepts inside this bill. The term integrated arose out of discussions with the mental health providers and the substance abuse addictions folks who felt that integrated was a broader term. There also was felt the importance of integrating care across settings. Dr. Hoffman emphasized this during our work group, integrating from not only the clinic itself, but to the hospital and back, because that's where the patient goes, integrating care to the nursing home and back. And so it's integration across settings as well as integration across specialties. So we also had discussions about the vice chair of the committee was a gastroenterologist, and we talked a bit about oncology patients may feel that their medical home is best served by an oncologist, and so not necessarily considered traditionally a primary care physician. We also talked about other than similar situations in other specialties. So we use the broader term integrated as a means of trying to capture all of the potential of how to better coordinate care across all settings, realizing that primary care is where a lot of the focus needs to be initially, and where where primary care has attempted to do this, and you know, speaking as a family physician, that's what we're trained to do is integrate and care coordinate, and we also realize the importance of primary care. So we really felt that it's an integrated health home of which the first initial focus would be on the primary care aspects of it, but that's sort of why that is why the Health Fund Board landed on the recommendation integrated health home to be encompassing of all those settings and all those situations. Also thinking of that sometimes a patient who's got chronic mental illness may not also go to a primary care setting but might go to a behavioral health clinic, and then they would need to work on making sure that they get adequate primary care in an alternative setting. We don't think that the name necessarily precludes. I've been to an NGA conferences on this. I've been worked with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, who had a team of us come out and talk about medical home. A lot of the work across the nation is done by physician groups aggregating together, but also by others. And I don't think it precludes us. Who knows what this bill does is set up an advisory committee to sit down and come up with some standards. And we use the term integrated health home because because that's what the discussion in the delivery committee and then later in the health fund board called it. But the standards would be more focused towards the primary care setting because we feel the emphasis should be on chronic disease and preventive care, which would be primarily, predominantly addressed in the primary care setting.
Excellent. Okay, Senator Cruz.
Yeah, what would prevent UPA from doing that now without a bill?
Chairman Sanderson, Senator Cruz.
Other than potentially money.
Hours of the day. does not necessarily preclude. I think the purpose of this bill by the health fund board was to set was to give to you some options for legislative direction to make sure we would proceed and go forward. That you know we would make sure we got all the stakeholders at the table. That's why we talk about the advisory committee. The original bill had me picking them. Now we have the Department of Human Services Director picking who sits at the table. We thought of this as the first step towards some quality standards. We also saw it as the first steps towards payment reform. It also directs the Department of Medical Assistance to, you know, really look at this and if funds are available, look at how they could possibly incentivize through payment structure, what the standards that are developed could be used, as well as in directing PEB and OEB and other public purchasing option payers in the state to also adopt it. So it's really just giving a direction from you all to these entities to go forward and do this.
Okay. So that's all I want to do on this one, but I want committee to know.
Chairman, I just want to add that the fiscal on our bill is primarily more for the second part of the bill, which was the, and I remember from our hearing, we had Laura Brennan, and we were talking about 100% access state and quality improvement projects. We actually thought we could absorb this, except for some meeting costs, for this part of the bill. A lot of the cost in the fiscal is primarily on the grants to communities to do that healthy community part and preventative population health approach that would complement the work that's going to be done in the homes, whatever name they are ending up to be.
Okay. So the committee, I wanted you to just know that we will be making the decision and maybe we can come up with our own name. If we can. So thank you very much, both of you. And now we want to talk about another amendment. And it's been sort of termed 2009 Light. And I'd like to call Tom Holt, Steve Doty, Laura Brennan, and Betsy Earls. But I don't know if all four of you want to sit up there, but you are our panel.
I'll start and then I'll move.
Pardon?
Okay.
Do we have a bill?
This is amendment. And the amendment hasn't come back yet. Is that correct?
Right, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm looking for it.
Yeah.
Yes.
It could be new stuff.
Big new stuff. Okay.
Not on the press.
Basically, yes. Betsy, do you want to start?
Sure. Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Betsy Earls, representing Associated Oregon Industries, and I'm here with my colleagues. I'll let them introduce themselves as they come up. We are appearing before you tonight to present conceptually a set of amendments that we believe represent logical next steps in Oregon's health reform efforts. Many of us and many of you watched the process of the Oregon Health Fund Board unfold during the last interim. Much of the work done by the board and its subcommittees was very valuable and highly relevant to the situation we now find ourselves in. The proposal that we have been working on and that we hope to bring forward to you soon seeks to build on the work that was done by the Health Fund Board and subcommittees. We do not intend to go back over work that has already been done. Rather, our proposals are intended to be a low-cost, practical way to move health reform forward while minimizing the risks of disruption, both to the insurance market and to state health programs. The program that we envision sets up an ongoing process of reviewing and executing steps outlined by the Health Fund Board and subcommittees in an action-based as opposed to a study-based manner. We look forward to discussing our plans in detail with you and to working to improve health care delivery and access in Oregon. And I'll let Tom. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Chair Monica Anderson, committee members, for the record, my name is Laura Brennan, and I work for Pacific Source Health Plans, an Oregon-based not-for-profit health plan that's been in business since 1933. I'm here to talk about the Oregon Health Authority and the concept that we're proposing. And before I begin with describing the authority, I truly want to pause and state that this specific authority concept, although coming from industry leaders, is the result of the incredibly hard work of the Oregon Health Fund Board and Representative Greenlich. I want to sincerely and directly thank them for their leadership and their work, and for without them, I and we would not be here tonight discussing an Oregon Health Authority. Stating that, I'm sure there are doubts about this proposal and the actual authority of the authority, if you will. Candidly, not too long ago, I probably would have shared many of those doubts. But I'm here before you tonight, and this was sort of a big decision for me, because I'm a witness to the progress that the industry is making in regard to healthcare reform, and specifically the authority. I think you'll find many similarities in the Oregon Health Fund Board report's recommendations, as well as in House Bill 2009. I also am confident that much of the industry wants to work with the government and others to make sure the authority is meaningful, action-oriented, and truly about reform. So the Health Authority, this proposal is creating the Health Authority as a part of the Department of Human Services, a division within the Department of Human Services, and the authority would be and have the authority within DHS be responsible for the implementation of healthcare reform rather than creating a new state agency. That is a difference. This proposal puts the authority under the supervision and control of the Director of Human Services. The DHS director would be responsible for the performance of the authority's duties and functions and powers. The director of DHS would define the appropriate timeline and budget to operationalize healthcare reform actions of the authority. And in this proposal, the authority is the policy-making body for planning, implementation, and operations of healthcare reform in Oregon. The authority will implement, as we propose, recommendations of the Health Fund Board report and the Legislative Assembly, and begin immediately operations of the recommendations that are ready for near-term implementation. Furthermore, the authority will expand upon the Oregon Health Fund Board report and recommendations and present further policy recommendations as we move on to the Executive Leadership Board and the 2011 legislature in order to move healthcare reform even more. The Health Authority would have an executive board. This executive level authority board would provide oversight and guidance to the implementation plan and the performance goals. The executive board would be based upon the structure and the statute of the Oregon Health Policy Commission. It would be a 9-person citizen board appointed by the governor and be called the Executive Committee of the Health Authority. And it was funny because I said, do we really have to say this or do we really have to do this? But one difference between the Health Policy Commission and the Health Care Executive Board would be there would not be legislators on the Executive Board of the Oregon Health, of the Health Authority. And the functions of the Health Authority, there would be several functions, and the key, the ones that I really want to draw and point out, draw notice to and point out, key functions of the authority would include implementing and, as needed, developing further action plans and performance goals for healthcare reform, developing policies for and provisions for publicly funded medical care and medical assistance, ensuring the promotion and protection of the public's health, and implementing the components included in the Oregon Health Fund Board's building blocks. And Tom will talk to you more about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Tom Holt with the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. Our proposal would immediately direct the authority to create a number of advisory and technical committees, which we envision as being working committees of experts, operational experts, who would assist the authority in development of both near-term projects and ensuring that the operational analysis and development of work plans that is necessary to move various pieces of healthcare reform forward take place with the appropriate expert input. And also, we would see these committees as identifying things that have not yet known for future work that would be brought to DHS and to the legislature as necessary. So overall, we would see them as providing direction, oversight, and especially execution of projects. We envision these groups as being a real crucial link between state policy and program and the private sector and the expertise that can be brought to bear to move reform forward in that manner. We've developed initially a list mainly based on the 450 series of bills and the Oregon Health Fund Board report of committees, but we want to emphasize that we wouldn't see these as being forever, that the composition would change over time as different needs develop and work is completed. But we would initially suggest including committees on provider payment reform, which you just heard a bill about that, evidence-based practice guidelines and promoting the use and actual implementation of evidence-based practices, healthcare data reporting, healthcare workforce, pulse registry. There's a bill that's I think could fly on its own already moving through the process. Integrated health homes, although we're agnostic about what they might be called. I understand there's some internecine warfare about what the name may be. Statewide health improvement and quality improvement, information technology, a committee dedicated to looking at PEB and OAB and other state purchasing on behalf of state and government employees to better coordinate that. Capital project reporting, which there is a bill that we've been discussing. Very important issue that has not been part of the legislation around healthcare reform so far, and that's medical malpractice reform. And a committee also looking at integrating what we do at a state level with whatever comes down the road from the feds, and importantly, quality improvement. We see those as very functional working, kind of roll-up-the-sleeves sorts of groups. We don't see them as navel-gazing kind of committees at all. Those who participate would be expected to bring real expertise and work to bear in those efforts. And we would hope there will be an iterative process between them and whatever staff there is of the health authority, DHS, other state purchasing of health care, and this body, so that we can continue to move forward in an incremental way, building consensus along the way through these committees and moving forward on all on those things that we can build consensus on, take action on those things in which it is obvious that action is ready to be taken, and where there is further study needed to guide that study. And if I could just call out a couple of quick examples, the pulse registry. That seems to be something everybody gets what it is, what it needs to look and feel like. That would be something where we would have a technical committee that would simply oversee implementation of something that people have pretty well agreed is beneficial and can be done in fairly short order. Integrated health home or whatever we're going to call it, while conceptually at a policy level there seems to be fairly wide agreement that that would be a good thing to move toward, the details still need considerable work. So that would be something where we would expect one of these committees to really roll up their sleeves and do the implementation work in concert with the authority to move that forward. And then medical malpractice would be a much bigger, longer-term project.
I can hardly wait till you get to the exchange. Are you going to include the exchange?
Chair Miles Anderson, Senator Morissette, stand by. last thing I wanted to touch on is that we would also, while we do not have the discussions are going on, I think, elsewhere, we're not calling out a specific funding mechanism for expansion. We do think it is important that a public purpose fund be created where monies dedicated to Medicaid and Medicaid expansion actually stay there and don't end up building bridges. So with that, I'll turn it over to Steve Doty, who will address Senator Morrison's question.
But before we go to Steve, one of the real concerns I had with 2009 and the authority was what authority we were giving the authority. And you kind of glanced around that as to, you know, the authority to implement the recommendations of the Health Fund Board, I think you did mention, and I'm wondering the way I envision this, because we're kind of elected folks up here, that this authority makes recommendations to us, and we either say yay or nay, and once we've said yay, then the implementation takes place. What am I missing?
Senator Montes-Anderson, Senator Cruz, or Chair Montes-Anderson, Senator Cruz, I think that you're absolutely right, and perhaps I wasn't clear enough. When I mentioned the Oregon Health Fund Board recommendations and the Legislative Assembly, so upon the approval of the Legislative Assembly, you're all addressing in the 450 series the Health Fund Board recommendations. So thank you for the question. I hope that clarifies.
I feel better now. So.
Oh, why don't we get to the exchange?
Yeah, I can't wait either. Senator, Chair Montes-Anderson and members of the committee, my name is Steve Doty. I'm a member of the Oregon Association of Health Underwriters. We are an association that of independent insurance agents and brokers and consultants who represent employers and individuals in the purchase of health insurance. I also served on the Finance Committee for the Oregon Health Fund Board and was on the Exchange Work Group and also the Market Reform Work Group as well. And it's those issues that I would like to address today. My concern is that 2009 sort of ignores many of the recommendations that we came up with out of that work group and out of the committee. Given the potential impact on individuals and small employers, the legislature should move carefully and cautiously before creating an insurance exchange or making any changes to underwriting or rating requirements for individuals and small employers. Good intentions oftentimes produce unintended consequences. A good example of that was last session the legislature passed House Bill 2002, which merged the two small employer pools, the 2 to 25 and the 26 to 50. On the surface, that may have seemed to be a pretty harmless thing. It may seem to be a wise thing. But the result was that there were many small employers that had huge rate increases, some as high as 70%. I had several of my own clients that had 20, 30, 40% rate increases. Those rate increases were not the result of any change in risk factors of those groups or their costs. It was solely the result of the change in the rating methodology required by the legislation. So it's that kind of damage that we hope that we avoid as we move down this path. So there are three areas I want to touch on briefly. One is the underwriting, others rating, and the other the exchange. In the underwriting, a guarantee issue may be very desirable, but in order to have guarantee issue, we need to have an individual mandate. Without an individual mandate, it's just ripe for adverse selection. The state of Washington, as I'm sure you know, did this several years ago, and it wasn't long before there weren't any carriers left, and it was impossible to buy an individual policy because people waited till they needed it and then purchased the policy and then dropped it soon after. An independent actuary that was hired by the Oregon Health Fund Board estimated that changing our current individual market, which is medically underwritten, to a guaranteed issue market would increase rates by a minimum of 21%. And there are almost 250,000 people in the state of Oregon who buy individual policies. So just by making that change, those individuals are going to see an increase of at least 21%. Some actuaries I've spoken to predicted to even be more than that. But the other point I like to make is we already have guaranteed issue in Oregon, and that's called OMIP. I know that there's great concerns about OMIP and its funding, and those are legitimate concerns, but the solution is not to abolish OMIP. The solution is to change how it's funded and to create a broader base of assessment. Right now, that's on the backs of the fully insured plans. And I know that there's been discussion about how to change that, but I would like to make a suggestion that our association has come up with, and that is one solution to fund this is to use the current workers' benefit fund, which right now bills every employer in the state And we could use that infrastructure to fund OMIP. And that way every employer participates, whether they provide insurance or not. It's not creating a new tax structure. We're just building on an existing tax structure. And that would spread the risk over the entire population of the state, of the working population of the state of Oregon. And fully insured health insurance plans would see a reduction in the premiums because the assessment would be eliminated. Now, with regard to rating, there's a lot of discussion about community rating, but I believe the community rating is a mistake. I've attached an exhibit to my testimony, and I don't know how much detail you want me to go in. There's a lot of numbers, but if you want to look at that briefly, to give you an idea, what I did was ask the head actuary and underwriter for Providence Health Plan to take one of their current health plans that they sell for individual policies and convert those rates into a community rate. As right now, it's age-rated. As you can see, this is an existing plan. If you look at, for example, somebody who's age 25, they could buy that $500 deductible plan for $192 a month. If we go to a community rate, it jumps to $273, which increases their premium by 42%. And then if you add guarantee issue on top of that, that makes it an increase of 72%. And if you look at the same numbers of family, you can see that the huge increases that occur. But the other point I want to make is that as the actuary calculated these rates, I wanted to make sure to express that these rates are not sustainable. If they were forced to offer community rates to the market, they wouldn't offer these rates because they would only be attractive to the older, sicker population, and it wouldn't be long before those rates would be even higher still. An example is the state of New Jersey, which about 15 years ago went to pure community rating. And they have some community rates for an individual with a $1,000 deductible range between $2,500 and $6,000 a month, and for a family between $5,000 and $14,000 a month. And I'm making those numbers up. That's the result of community rating. So it's important that we make sure that if whatever we do, that we make sure that rates remain attractive to the younger, healthier population. Because even with an individual mandate, if the rates aren't attractive to the younger population, they simply won't enroll, regardless of the penalty that's imposed. So we want to be careful that we make sure that we don't drive the younger, healthier population away from the pool. In closing, we'll talk about the exchange. The Finance Committee of the Oregon Health Board, on which I serve, had lengthy discussions on the creation of an insurance exchange, and we had many outside consultants hired to educate us on what an exchange does and doesn't do. What I found interesting is on the very first presentation they made, one of the statements they said was that an insurance exchange does not lower health care costs. My response is, then why are we talking about it? If it doesn't lower health care costs, then why do we? What's it supposed to do? And that's been evidenced by the state of Massachusetts, which, as I understand, is one of the only states that has a functioning exchange, and they've experienced double-digit rate increases in their premiums at renewal, and so it hasn't done anything to lower health care costs. One of the arguments for an exchange is that we'll give individuals and small employers the ability to better negotiate for better rates like large employers. But if you look at the recent DCBS report on health insurance in Oregon, it shows that the average premium for an individual is $166 a month, and for small employers it's $262, while the average for large employers is $283. So individuals and small employers already have lower rates than large employers, so we have to ask, what would they be negotiating for? Some argue that an exchange would create a large pool, but large pools by themselves do not necessarily translate into lower premiums. And individuals and small employers are already pooled by the carriers, and the rates they charge are based on the claimed experience of those pools, and an exchange does not change that dynamic at all. The only way you change that is if you eliminate the carriers and have the exchange become a single payer. And I don't think that's what anybody's advocating here. Massachusetts has had great success in enrolling a lot of people, but the exchange is not the reason why. Also, one of the things, the question I ask is, how much does an exchange cost? Massachusetts charges an additional 4% load to the premium to fund the exchange. I've asked that question several times on the Finance Committee. What does it cost to create an exchange, and how is it going to be paid for? And are those costs going to be offset by administrative savings that the exchange will perform that the carriers don't? Can the exchange do those things cheaper and more efficiently than carriers? I doubt it. There are about 436,000 newly covered people in Massachusetts. 150,000 of those were enrolled through employers, 76,000 enrolled in Medicaid, 170,000 qualified for a subsidy, and were therefore required to purchase coverage through the exchange. Only 40,000 people purchased insurance without the subsidy, and only half of them, 20,000, purchased through the exchange without the subsidy. So the subsidy is the reason people enrolled, not the exchange. The exchange simply administered the subsidy. And we have an organization now called FEOP that functions very well in administering a subsidy. It simply lacks the funds to do so. So in closing, I just hope that if Oregon is to create an insurance exchange, that it should not be the only source where individuals and small employers can buy their insurance. It should compete in the private market along with other with carriers. And I strongly urge that before Oregon rushes to establish an exchange, that the exchange be the subject of a detailed analysis, and that the results of that analysis and any recommendations be submitted to the 2011 legislature. Thank you.
Chairman Sanderson, I'll wrap up. As Steve mentioned, part of our proposal would be to give some specific direction to DCBS to study particular aspects of an exchange, including many of the issues that he just outlined. But again, we want to underscore that our effort is to come up with a means to move firmly but deliberately forward in healthcare reform, and to build consensus as we go, not deliver yet another report to sit on a shelf, but actually a continual iterative process that moves the whole effort forward. In terms of our process here, we hope to be back before you with actual legislative language very soon. We've had a couple of very productive meetings on actual legislative language and making very rapid progress on that, and so we hope to be back here very quickly with that. So with that, I think we're all open to questions.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Morrison.
I think we ought to go to a single payer. That's where I'm coming from, and I think the exchange is part of that. And you know, I think our future is going to be a single payer. Right now the insurance companies and you know, we're fighting that battle, but it's going to happen. So I'm not sure I like your plan.
And I come from the standpoint that I don't think a single payer will work. So there's obviously
it will at some point.
I think there's really much to be said about a public-private partnership here. But I truly am looking forward to having language, because I do want the representatives of the Oregon Health Fund Board, who are very, I will give them some time to respond to this, but I truly want them to be looking at your proposal and telling us what they like and what they don't like about it, because I think that's part of what this body is all about. I know that there's been a lot of work with the Oregon Health Fund Board, so that's why I was very interested when you came forward with this idea. This isn't the stuff. I don't know. Is there any further discussion at this point, Senator Morris?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we had a mandate and a benefit, it actually wouldn't be a mandate, but if you had a benefit and every Oregon eligible person had that benefit, would you have adverse selection, that the problem you're talking about with the community rating?
Is that directed to me? Chair Motis Anderson and Senator Morris, I think there's always the potential for that if it isn't priced right. And that, I think the point I was trying to make is, even with a mandate, you can force people to buy insurance by law. But and we spent quite a bit of time discussing what the penalty would be if people don't buy insurance. And I don't think, if somebody cannot afford the premium, they can't afford the penalty either. So regardless of where we set the penalty, the premium has to be affordable. So that's why I think that whatever we do, we want to make sure that we keep the premium affordable and attractive to the younger, healthier population. And only in that way, I think, can employer mandate work. Excuse me, an individual mandate work.
I think there's been a lot of discussion, though, regarding mandates. And I think the vision is to mandate health, at least my interpretation of this whole process, and envision a mandate for every Oregonian. And yes, we're going to have some that aren't going to sign up, but sort of like with the driver's license, we have people that don't get their driver's license and drive without a driver's license either. So I'm not sure very much more. Do you want other questions?
Well, if I may,
yes.
Madam Chair, just an editorial comment. It was kind of exclamatory, the $14,000 for a family rate in New Jersey. I just looked at the PEB data. Family rate is $17,000 plus. Right now. That's shocking.
Is that right?
It is. Well, I guess I'll just go all the way and say I don't think insurance companies provide health care. They just don't provide health care. You provide doctors, but the doctors are there anyway. I honestly think that over time we are going to move to a simplified system of health care where everybody contributes to it, and Medicare, Medicaid, veterans, whatever, and people will have coverage. And if you want to buy up, maybe that's where the insurance companies will be, to buy up. But as far as, you know, the average person, middle class, will have access to health care, and it'll be a different system. It'll be an evolutionary system, and you're right, we're not ready for it now, but I don't want us to not go in that direction, and I think this is the plan here, is to prevent us from going in that direction, precluding us from going in that direction.
Madam Chair, I'd say that this plan here is to move us in a direction in a deliberative way. Your vision of providing health care for everybody. If you think health care is expensive now, just wait till you see how much it costs when it's free.
Medicare, Medicaid.
Well, but my vision basically is I want to have something pass out of this body this session, and that is my main concern. And I think maybe we're looking at 2009 and we're looking at your concept. And I want to have something that we will need, that we will be able to pass. We've been able to pass 4 of the 7 bills. We have not had the opportunity to discuss the pros and cons of 2009, and that's why I did this, and I'm very concerned regarding not being able to have this, and this is my first attempt to have the 2009 discussion with this committee. We definitely had joint committees with Representative Greenlitz, but it was just... the first meeting with just Representative Green and Tom Burns explaining to us what 2009 was all about without hearing the dynamics from the various entities that have a very strong interest in this. And then the second meeting was on the provider tax, and again, just telling us an option of a certain part of the, not provider tax, but the...
Premium tax.
So... that's why I felt it was so important here, and I think it's important for the Oregon Health Fund Board people to hear that too, that we want a product that we can get out of this body, and maybe the 2009 on there will happen. I'm not that optimistic at this point in the game, so that's why I feel it's so important for you to be here to explain yours, and then I would love to have Carol Robinson, do you want to come up and just respond to this, because I think there's still some work that needs to be done, and if we're able to get 2009 into this committee, that would be wonderful. If not, then we need to start looking at options like what you have proposed. Thank you.
Other suggestion. I think that we have to have some schematics. You know, 2009 has things moved out of DHS and some things left in DHS. SPD is in. What happens when you split Medicaid? You have part of Medicaid in one area, part of Medicaid in the other. I would like to see some drawings of boxes and flow charts and all of that stuff. That would help us understand the structure that you're proposing.
Mm-hmm. And Senator Morris and Senator Morris said we will absolutely provide that.
And I hate to give the Oregon Health Fund Board people, I see three of them in the back that have worked so hard on getting us this far, but I truly am giving you more work to take a look at some of these proposals so that we can hear from you what you like and if anything or not. So that's why we're doing this. Okay. Because this discussion is not finished, and we really need something in writing from Ledge Council so that Oregon Health Fund Board people can respond. So, Carol, do you want to come up real quick?
Chair Mona Sanderson, committee members. For the record, my name is Carol Robinson, Interim Director of Oregon Health Fund Board, and I just first of all want to make it clear that I'm not testifying at all about an alternative proposal tonight because we haven't seen any details of a proposal at all. And so that's concerning to us that we would not be part of that process in helping develop a proposal that would reflect the work of the board. And not only have they not spoken to myself about the proposal or shared any details, but also with none of the board members. So I want to make that clear, first of all, that we have not been part of this process of developing an alternative proposal. And that's somewhat troubling at this point in the conversation. Ms. Brennan testified that she maybe at some point in time would not have been up on that panel, but she's I wrote down her words that she's been witness to the progress of the industry, and I think that's great. I mean, I commend the industry for making progress toward anything that's action-oriented, meaningful, and reform-minded. As something that they would support. However, the devil is in the details, as we all know. And I would also say that we are very concerned as a board, and I think that all of the participants in the work developing Senate Bill 329, the passage of that bill, the work setting up the Health Fund Board and its seven committees and its two work groups with over 100 volunteers from all kinds of representation of the industry and outside of the industry stakeholders, who held 110 public meetings over a 14-month period of time, who received input from 2,000 Oregonians in 25 community meetings across the state, every corner of the state. It's concerning to me that at this point in time, an alternative proposal that would create advisory and technical committees to study and make recommendations at this point would be the beginning point of a conversation. I hope that what we see as this comes out of Legislative Council is a proposal with some real reflection of those 110 public meetings and the amazing work that Oregonians around the state from every corner of the state and every aspect of the industry put into the work of the board. So I respect the chair's and appreciate the chair's willingness to be part of the legislative process, to take the policy recommendations of the board and help craft those into policy statutes that will move health reform forward as a state. And I hope that we can work together to with health, House Bill 2009 to make that happen on both sides of this building in the best way possible. I will say that in reference to the conversation about the health insurance exchange, Mr. Doty's testimony is really Very, very much in line with the recommendations of the Health Fund Board, and with my understanding of where House Bill 2009 has moved in the development of an exchange in the next biennium without any operational functions until a business plan is approved by the 2011 legislature. So I do think the Health Fund Board really appreciated the complexity and the policy components that need to be in place for an exchange to work appropriately and not have those unintended consequences that are so possible if things are done in a rushed format or too quickly before you really look at the issues of individual mandate, of guaranteed issue, and of appropriate funding source for those kinds of subsidies that would be necessary if you do put an individual mandate in place. So I believe that the components that were recommending to the House Committee on House Bill 2009 are very much in line with the concerns that were issued tonight about moving too fast on an exchange. So on that, I would just say that we look forward to working together to bring forward the best proposal that both chambers have an opportunity to really have an imprint on and weigh in on and do the best, make the best possible policy decisions about the work that the Health Fund Board has done over this period of time. And we look forward to actually seeing some things in writing. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Cruz?
Yeah, thank you. I watched the work of the Health Fund Board from a distance. I knew several people on several of the committees. I happened to have fairly good relationship with some of them. One of the frustrating things one member of the exchange committee told me was that they were told to create, their job was to create an exchange. Not to see whether an exchange was where we should go. Their job was to create an exchange. In the meeting we had with Representative Greenick's committee, when I questioned him on that, I said, don't you think we ought to compare an exchange to the individual market? And he said, no, I want an exchange. He said that. We spent 2 hours in that committee going over a 60-page conceptual amendment. Some sections of the bill we didn't even address. So you want to talk about collaborative. I don't think we have seen collaborative. In my opinion, the Health Fund Board used the process to move to a degree to a predetermined destination. And I don't think that's collaborative. I did read the original 2009. I know it's changed. God knows how, but because I haven't bothered to read the amendment. There were so many troubling things in the original bill. At this point in time, you know, there seems to be a rush in this legislative assembly to do things. It's kind of just to do things. And in fact, I heard a member in the House, on the floor of the House, say, I would rather do something even if it's wrong than do nothing. And I thought, how absurd is that? And so I don't want to do something just to do something. I want to do the right things. And I think there is some room for discussion in this slightly different approach to reform. And by the way, we just passed four bills out of this committee tonight that are significant pieces of legislation. So I don't think at this point we can say we're doing nothing. We just need to be very deliberative and very careful so that in our rush to do something, we don't take ourselves down the wrong road.
Thank you. No, I think, okay, I was not a fan for a while of the Health Fund Board. I have become more open to the recommendations made in 2009 as I've heard them. I think it should be a public-private partnership. I think FEOP is one of the best programs we have right now, and there certainly is a place for that. There is a place for the insurance industry in it, but I don't want to exclude the public aspect of it, and I think it would be ridiculous unconscionable if we stopped right now and did nothing. I want to proceed in an orderly way with the recommendations of the Health Fund Board. I want us to take a look at what we have to do during the interim to bridge the gap, and I agree that Representative Greenlee kept saying, well, it's an empty box right now, and people are saying, oh, but we know what you want to put in it, though. We know you want to go single payer. So that's where I think the whole divide is right now, is whether I think the insurance industry is freaking out, thinking that, they're not going to, they're going to be the administrators, they're going to run the program, and the insurance industry has been prominent on the health fund board, and so it's an insurance. Well, I don't want them to co-opt the process. So I'm happy with what we're doing. I wasn't 2 months ago, but as I see the progress, and I'm now, whether or not we are going to, and there's some discussion, an adequate hearing on the Senate Policy Committee. We've had the hearings on the House side, and I think that our chair is going to make sure that we do have a hearing on Senate Bill 2009. Now, this Johnny-come-lately program is, I think, a diversion. And I think we ought to consider it, but I think we should not be diverted from the track that we're on right now.
Chair Mona Sanderson and Senator Cruz, Senator Wilson, I do appreciate your comments very much, both, actually. And I think that when I've been representing the Health Fund Board's work since the beginning of January, and, of course, not having been at the helm under the creation of the work, one of the things that I comment on and at every opportunity is how much I appreciate the sequencing of the plan, and that it's my personal philosophy that good policy needs to be applied very thoughtfully, and that there are tremendous recommendations in the whole of the plan, but looking at how to sequence the implementation of those recommendations in a way that not only fits with the capacity of the state to apply those recommendations, but also fits with public will. And I think that developing an understanding and buy-in on a number of these things is really important. There are concrete recommendations that can get started now that can save money. And I think this is a very important thing to make sure that we understand that in order to really truly implement some of the wonderful bills that were passed out of this committee tonight, and hopefully three more in the very near future, that in order to do that effectively, that there needs to be a mechanism, an authority at the state level, and I wouldn't mind being the queen of renaming some of these things, but I'm not, so I'll call it the authority, and I think that having a mechanism for implementing these good policy bills that we've brought forward to start saving money in the system and start consolidating our purchasing power as a state, getting the state's house in the order to really be able to drive efficiencies as the state purchases over a quarter of the health care, I think we have a tremendous potential, but we need the authority in place to do that. So we do look forward to working on this side of the building on these things too, and we'll look forward to seeing some concrete proposals and being able to respond to those appropriately, because right now I feel like I'm just kind of responding a little bit to a mirage, and it is a late coming mirage, and I'd like to see it in more detail. So thank you for the time to talk tonight.
Madam Chair,
no.
Why are we not meeting on the Senate side? Why are we meeting on the House side again? This is a House hearing.
I wondered that myself. I was looking
yeah,
for you.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Have you ever sent Barney a thank you letter for dumping all this on the curiosity?
And you know, he can't buy me a drink now, according to the rule.
That's true.
Thank you. Thank you. I truly believe this is a healthy process, and I will say it again. I want to make sure that we have something that can pass in my house, and the only way is for us to flush out some of the questions that the Senate has that have not been able to be flushed out. And that's I know some people were disappointed that we had this discussion, but I felt that if we could at least get it on the table, and then you help Carol and Dr. Smith and Tina to look at is there any credence to what is being proposed that could help not take away what the Oregon Health Fund Board and all of the consumer, that's one disadvantage that this new proposal is, it hasn't had the consumer input like the process that we had with 329 or the Oregon Health Fund Board. So, but I still feel it's a healthy process, and it's so major change that I really feel that the conversation needs to be had. Okay, it hasn't stopped. We only have six more meetings. I think it's six more. So there's a lot to do. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 456, and I'm going to open a public hearing on 453.
Nothing.
It was basically, all right. And what about 454? I don't know why people thought we weren't going to be discussing these two bills.
454.
That's why we had it from... Okay, well, we have...
Which one are we doing?
Well, we were going to talk about 453. Mr. Shook, would you...
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 454 work group has been meeting...
453, I said
453?
Mm-hmm.
Their amendments have been submitted. There are actually two amendments to that. Recall two provisions of that bill. One was the sunset provision of the Oregon Health Fund Board, and the other one was a claims data collection capability. One of the amendments eliminates the sunset provision of the Oregon Health Fund Board. So now what we have, if you accept, I'm not sure if it's dash one or dash two, would be the elimination of the first provision, which is the elimination of the sunset provision of the Oregon Health Fund Board. And then the second part continues to be the claims data collection. Those amendments we have, they're in your packet, and we are awaiting a fiscal on 453. On 454...
No, let's just stick with 453,
okay?
453. And at this point, I only have the dash two, so I
the ones right here.
The ones.
I don't.
I think they're just one and two.
Yeah, I have the ones. Yeah, I have the ones. Okay. So, and I cannot remember. Did we? I haven't looked real quickly. Did we go over these amendments yet?
Madam Chair, no, we have not looked at the amendments.
So that's what I want to. That's what we plan to do today, then, so that when we get the so. We know which direction, so we can tell fiscal which amendments we even want.
Look again.
So, with that, sorry to burn you. I thought
who's
that you were okay.
Let's see. Here they are. Dash two, three pages.
Chair Mona Sanderson,
members of the committee. I'm bringing in reinforcements.
Good idea.
I'm Janine Smith, the administrator for the Office of Health Policy and Research, and we are amazed that you're going on, because we were going to pull all this together for you into a concise document, and it's on the edit mode, and we don't have it tonight, but we will get it to you ASAP. But essentially, a lot of work has been gone into 453, which was labeled the continuation of the Health Fund Board. Again, that bill was set up in the considering when we had the pre-session file to meet agency requirements. We weren't sure what the Health Fund Board was going to be doing, recommending, so it was before the health authority concept had really been fully developed back in the spring, about this time last year. And so we put it in sort of a placeholder. And now that there's been more movement in House Bill 2009, we're anticipating that there may be another vehicle in which to continue either the Health Fund Board or some other entity based on your current discussions. So that portion of the bill was is stripped out so that it is primarily focused on us doing some work that the Health Fund Board felt was really important, meaning the Office of Health Policy, to do some continuing work that the Health Fund Board had recommended still needed further work, which is to look at insurance exchange, payment reform, and other activities that were kind of the things that we didn't get to be fully developed. And then the majority of the bill is focused on an all-payer, all-claims database, which we've done some work group activities that Tina Edlin, my deputy, and Carol Robinson have been involved in terms of clarifying some of the language around those who would have their data collected and sort of the resolution around those clarifications in terms of the third-party administrators and the other data deliverers to the database.
So could you tell us what the dash ones and the dash twos do?
You want me to do that?
Yeah.
For the record, I'm Tina Edlin. I'm the Deputy Administrator at the Office of Health Policy and Research. The Dash 1 amendments were a result of some input from the Health Equities Committee of the Health Fund Board that our original language didn't really address the issue of health equities adequately in their minds, so they added specific language that this data would be used to look at the issue of health disparities in the state and that would be also collecting race and ethnicity data. The other piece of the Dash 1...
So that's...
And then there was another piece of the Dash 1s, and that was after a review by members of the Oregon Healthcare Quality Corporation and some national experts in privacy and security, we made the privacy language more robust than it was in the original. We thought we'd done a pretty good job in the original, but the privacy folks said that we needed to fix that language, so we did. I'm trying to think what else. I think that pretty much is it in the Dash 1s. The Dash 2 amendments were a result of some concerns expressed by the TPAs. So we include the TPAs in this data collection. The data would not come from providers in this database. It would actually come through health plans to the state. We included TPAs. They were concerned that the language wasn't precise enough around what exactly they'd be asked to report. They were actually the work group was actually very a great work group. They were very supportive of the issue of tying together quality and cost, which is what you can do with this kind of data. But they wanted us to specify how we'd be collecting the data. They wanted to make sure that it was standard billing data, because that's what this data is. It's billing data that everybody uses. It's what doctors bill health plans, physicians and providers bill health plans with. So we added language that specified national standards, that we would use national standards and forms. Let's see what else. We also wanted some protection against the issue of some TPAs are very, very small, some of the independent TPAs. So they wanted language that would indicate that we will be establishing thresholds below which we will not be asking people to report or companies to report. So that's what the
Dash 2.
That's what the Dash 2s do.
They were only those two.
And that's all.
Have they been distributed to the... is there opposition to this now?
I actually think that most of the issues with the TPAs have been taken care of. I think, Carol, I think you can probably talk a little bit more. There was one other work group.
Chair Monis Anderson, committee members, on the work group with the TPAs, we were preparing for Thursday morning a memo that would lay out all of their concerns and our willingness and understanding of our willingness to make sure that the rulemaking process for this bill would be very inclusive of the TPA's participation, and we've also certainly expressed that as well to the managed care organizations who we have been conferencing with as well on concerns. As far as opposition, I have continued to hear some concerns from some of the managed care organizations to this program, not all. And I want to be clear about there being differences within that sector. I think that there are some concerns about how the information would be transparent and whether we would report that publicly in aggregate, which we have assured them that would be the case. We are currently the only state in the country that does not receive paid data from or paid claims data from our managed care contracted organizations. And so I would offer that change is hard, as it is with many pieces of health reform, that a shift in what has been the norm to what we believe will add a tremendous value to the state on showing cost and quality data across the healthcare board, say, both commercial and government pay. So I think that there may still be some resistance, but I think that we have really tried to offer our assurances that in the rulemaking process, that their input on the reporting process, public reporting process of aggregate data and the safety of that from their competitive position would be protected.
And Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, I would just add that some of the discussions I've had with some of the folks that have raised some concerns is I turn back to what we've done with our hospital inpatient data, which is a set of data the state's been collecting for many years. And we worked through a very open process under the Health Policy Commission about 4 years ago for that. We had extensive representation, a large stakeholder group of those involved, including both insurers and the insurers and the hospitals and the providers at that point that were involved in that data. We had smaller technical work groups with their with staff from their particular entities helping us refine that. And then we always had public, before anything went public, we worked extensively with the hospitals to ensure that the data was correct and met with when they checked it. And it's been a very elaborate process. We've been doing this now for 4 years. We compared it to national standards. So now Oregonians are able to look and compare. We've done the same with working with the Division of Consumer and Business Insurance Division, where for the last 2 or 3 years we've been getting paid cost claims from the commercial insurers, and again had extensive work groups and technical assistance groups to ensure that we would do this in a thoughtful and manner, again with checks and balances before anything went public. We're doing it now currently with ambulatory surgical centers data and working with them and having them be part of the process on how that data is collected, how it will be aggregated, how it will be reported. So I think that the office has a track record in terms of any sort of data collection that we would do the same sort of process, a very open and thoughtful process, as transparent as possible to in the data collection. And then ensuring that we would do a public-private partnership with entities who have started down this road and building on their strengths, such as Quality Corp, which is translating that data back to the providers and back to the consumers, which is not our expectation.
expertise, but is certainly theirs. And so it is going to create a public-private partnership with ongoing entities and efforts that are currently going on, but it provides some sustainability and a state's really putting a contribution to those efforts. The current efforts in, say, the Quality Corp are on a volunteer participation arrangement. Volunteer dollars are funding it, and grant dollars are funding it. This, in partnership with those efforts, would be cause ongoing sustainability of that, of this data, and give us a bigger picture than just the hospital inpatient, which is all we have. When the world of medicine is going to the outpatient setting more and more, we've found that we need to get a big, in order to inform you on trends on healthcare and how to invest your, the best way to invest public dollars, we need to have a bigger picture.
I've been such a proponent of transparency, and we've been pushing and pushing, and now to get pushback from some organizations is frustrating. Do there need to be more amendments to address the threshold of the TPAs, or is that going to be in rules? Or
no, Chair Monis-Anderson, those, the threshold issue is actually addressed. The language was satisfactory as far as I understand, that we just point to the fact that we will be establishing thresholds in rule.
In the dash twos.
It's in the dash twos.
Yeah.
It's in the dash twos.
Because if that's truly... I am very comfortable with the way it is right now, and I'm not sure if the MCOs want to testify on these amendments, but I would like to carry this bill over if those in the back aren't ready to commit. But I would like to move this bill on Thursday, so Mr. Shook, can we carry Senate Bill 453 to Thursday? And Senator Morissette and Senator Cruz.
Well, I'd like to have a conversation about why we're the only state that doesn't have that, you know, what the pushback is, who's pushing back, why they're pushing back, why there's lack of transparency. I keep getting emails from people saying, we need more transparency. Oh, okay. I agree. But these are specifics that I would like to have more information about, and maybe we could provide more transparency.
Would
right?
You,
people kicking
Thursday?
And screaming into the world of transparency. How's that?
Would you be ready Thursday? And back? You take a look at these amendments, the dash twos in particular, but dash ones and dash twos?
Dash ones and dash twos.
Okay.
And Chair Monis-Anderson, also wanted to say, I think it's in the record already, we have letters of support from Regents and ODS on this bill.
Yeah, just two kind of technical, Madam Chair. If we're creating this authority, do we still need the health fund
eliminating
board?
No, we're eliminating it.
But I didn't see that. But the other thing is, I'm looking at Section 5 of the bill, and it talks about legislative approval of the comprehensive plan. It does, it says, upon legislative approval of the health fund program comprehensive plan.
Chair Monis-Anderson, Senator Cruz, I think that's related to the continuation of the health fund board,
right,
which is...
Okay, well, I was looking at the issues, whatever the entity is looking at is going to be exploring. And I just want to make sure that if we come to resolution on one or two, that we don't have to wait till we come to resolution on all of them.
Right.
I mean, it was the term comprehensive plan that I'm looking at that whole list in Section 4 as the comprehensive plan, and I want to make sure that if we have one or two, that we can move on that without waiting for the others. It was that wordsmithing thing, I think.
Senator Cruz, actually, the dash twos take care of a lot of that issue.
Do they?
Because
okay.
The dash twos actually basically say that the Oregon Health Fund Board will sunset. Originally, we had continued it in the original language of the bill. The dash twos basically allow the sunset to take place as originally conceived.
Okay. Madam Chair, I guess I was assuming that that whatever creature is created, that the areas that the comprehensive plan areas still exist.
Chair Mona Sanderson, Senator Cruz, it's a great point. And actually what we did was we kept Section 4, I think, is the section that actually outlines the areas that we want to continue working on.
Right.
And it keeps that, and it assigns it to OHPR to, to help carry that work forward.
Since
we don't know exactly what the...
Madam Chair, which is absolutely fine, but so I looked at Section 4, and assuming it's a different critter doing it, but then it lists the elements of the comprehensive plan, and then Section 5 talks about legislative approval of the comprehensive plan, and I'm thinking if we've come to a decision on malpractice without coming to a decision on an exchange or vice versa or whatever, I would not want the legislation to prohibit us from moving forward on A or B if we haven't decided on C.
The malpractice issue cannot be done. Well, are we planning on doing that under this plan?
Chairman Sanders, Senator Morissette, the Health Fund Board didn't have an opportunity to really get into the malpractice issue, even though they know it was a critical one brought up in many committees in all the discussions. And so the recommendation from the Health Fund Board was that more work needed to be done.
Okay.
And this was just the vehicle in which we wanted to make sure that point was made, so that, again, giving legislative direction to say, yes, do that. And we could do some of the background work of getting that process started, of discussing, and then whatever the entity that you all decide it'd be under the auspices of that. Because in House Bill 2009, we fall under the health authority if you do something, you know. We're usually doing the staffing for these entities.
I did introduce a bill on to put doctors who deal with Medicare, Medicaid under the umbrella of the state. And I knew it wouldn't go anywhere, but I said I wanted to have a discussion about what we're going to do with rural OBGYNs when we cut them off from the assistance.
It was a great bill, Senator.
It was a great bill.
Yes.
Now, but what I did get from Senator Posonsky was that he was going to have a work group this interim, and I think we ought to be talking about that. So maybe you should have that discussion with Senator Posonsky, because we need to do that in this. Whatever we're doing here needs to include that.
Yeah. And Chairman Sanders, Senator Morissette, couldn't agree with you more that we need to make sure we align anything that's going on, and can certainly make sure that that's accomplished. And certainly Senator Morris has done a lot of efforts in this in the past interims, and so how can we? We don't want to recreate the wheel. We want to, you know, where are we, and what do we need to know to move forward and get everyone around the table to make that decision collectively.
We have the votes on this committee, and maybe that's why we never get the legislation.
We get the bills.
So it isn't just Senator Posonsky.
Madam Chair,
I understand that.
This whole issue of medical malpractice is not difficult.
Oh,
we just need to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't need to study it. We need to do it.
Jumping off a building isn't difficult either.
We just need to do it. Right. Can you size on this?
So,
No,
what I want to do is I would love to move this on Thursday, and I think the people in the back have heard that. And I know there's dissension, people say I'll kill this bill if it goes through, but I think that transparency is extremely important in this whole process. I really think it's...
See who those people are.
And Chair Mona Sanderson and committee members, we do have some other people who are prepared to testify in favor, again, of the bill. So if you are going to have a carryover public hearing, there are additional people, including some legislators on the House side, who would like to come in and talk about their support for this proposal.
And just remember, we have an evening meeting scheduled for Thursday also. So
keeping us...
Yay! I thought
okay,
it was a state head of basketball game on Thursday.
Oh, that's over.
With that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill. Which one are we? 453, and open a public hearing on 454. It's our last bill. And
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 454 establishes data reporting for carriers offering health benefit plans and for third-party administrators.
Okay. I need to know what amendments.
Chair Mona Sanderson, committee members, the amendments on Senate Bill 454 were submitted to the FINDI administrator this afternoon, I believe.
Okay.
Thank you. And so it has been a very involved, several organizations throughout the process within a work group, and we, I think, have made significant progress in addressing concerns and recrafting the Section 8 and the bill that was particularly concerning to a lot of people in the first public hearing. I think that you will find when those amendments get back from LC that you have, we have a very different discussion about that bill, and I hope that it merits your strong consideration.
Okay. And I think Tom Holt wanted to testify on this bill also. And because we don't have amendments, you know.
Chairman Sanderson, members of the committee, once again for the record, Tom Holt with the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. Just to briefly report on our progress. We've had several, I would characterize as very productive meetings around, in particular, Section 6 and Section 8. My understanding is that there are other parts of the bill being worked on as well, but I think we're very close, and we most recently met about 4 hours ago, 5 hours ago now, and we'll be just awaiting to see what those amendments actually look like. We had a concept that we were discussing this afternoon and had to part due to schedules, but I think we're getting there.
I have something from Kaiser Permanente. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but it's from Daniel Field, Director, External Affairs. Are you aware of the suggestions that he wants to make?
Chairman Sanderson, yes, I have seen that letter, and we will be supportive of Mr. Field's suggestions.
Okay, and has the Oregon Health Fund Board people seen the letter from regarding Section 4, Section 5, Section 6, and Section 8? Basically, Section 4, basically they say this section directs DCBS to establish uniform statewide standards for the administrative functions of licensed health insurers. It is, well, rather than going through this, I'd like
copies.
For you to, we have copies here, so that you could take a look at that, so we may not maybe be ready on Thursday, but definitely next week. But I'd like you to take a look at what's here also. Is that any further discussion? And I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 454.
What it was.
And thank you, committee, so much, and we're adjourned.
Tom.